Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The University of Tulsa launched a new Oklahoma Center for the Humanities earlier this year. Today we'll hear about the plans of the center, which will invite the larger community to explore a given focus issue through a variety of viewpoints and disciplines. And that exploration will include everything from an annual seminar to public lectures, symposia, debates, along with performances, readings, and exhibitions. While the work of the center begins in earnest this fall, we'll get an overview of how the center will explore our histories, identities, and civic life with Sean Latham, the center's director. The center's first event has sprung out of an end-of-school-year celebration of student work into a first TU Arts and Humanities Festival, which will take place tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 5 at the Lorton Performance Center on the TU campus. All throughout the Performance Center, there will be exhibitions and performances featuring art, fiction, dance, film, music, poetry, screenwriting, theater, and much more. And the best part, it's all free and open to the public. Sean Latham is my guest today. He is the Walter Endowed Chair of English at the University of Tulsa, the new director of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities, and also the editor of the James Joyce Quarterly, which will be celebrating its 50th anniversary this summer. And he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Sean Latham, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
For the first time in my memory, the University of Tulsa is joining all their arts and humanities efforts together for a one-afternoon festival at the Lorton Center taking place tomorrow. Give us a sense of how this all came together.
Well, it happened very quickly and very unexpectedly. It's part of something we're putting together in conjunction with the new Oklahoma Center for the Humanities that we've started here. And we thought it would be interesting as a way to start our work to put together a small humanities festival here in the spring. So I imagined a few students reading some poetry, a few students performing some music, we would serve some pizza, and it would be a nice way to get things going. And very, very quickly, we now have over 80 student performers and artists on the program. We've taken over the entire Lorton Performance Center, every hallway, every performance center, every practice room, the lobbies, the balconies. There's really not a place you're going to be able to walk into that building and not see art, hear music, watch a student read a poem, read from their fiction, watch a theatrical performance. I think it'll be a really extraordinary event.
And this is the first time in memory where all of these disciplines have come together for a one-time event.
Yeah, I think that's right. So often you see these things sort of isolated, and it's sometimes hard to build on audiences as a result because, one, the calendar gets very full as everybody does their own thing. And there's never been a kind of capstone moment here where I think we can just say, look at all the students have accomplished across the arts, not just our artists, not just our musicians, not just our actors, but really let's see what everyone is doing together. And especially we've scheduled this for a sort of magical day on campus that has the horrible name of Dead Day between the end of courses and the beginning of final exams. So we've put this festival on one of those days as a kind of send-off certainly to the seniors that are graduating, but also as a way to just pause and say, look at the extraordinary work that's been done over the course of the year by these students.
And how did this all come together? I mean, you obviously have music involved since it's primarily the music building of film studies. I assume there may be some student films being shown? Or?
Yeah, we'll have films, student films running throughout the day. The way we've set this thing up is that in all of these spaces, we'll be rolling the program over basically every 20 minutes. So you'll be able to walk in and out at any time during the day. And if you stay around for an hour, you might see three different kinds of programs in any given space. And if you want to move around between the spaces, you'll find different things. So there might be a woodwind concert in the Meinig Performance Hall. You can go into one of the bigger theaters and watch student films, which will be playing throughout the day. Other student films will be on monitors playing in the hallway. The entire beautiful lobby of the building will be filled with two-dimensional art on canvases, three-dimensional sculptures that are being curated by the School of Art for us. The digital screens that we have there will be displaying digital art that students have produced. And in fact, this is going to be, I think, pretty cool. The theater department has taken there some of the scenes that they've produced, some of the backdrops that they've produced for the theater.
Scenic design, yeah.
And laid them on the floor so you can go up to the balcony and you'll be able to look down and really get this really nice view of what the students have done in terms of the artwork for theater. And we'll also have their smaller 3D models down in the lobby as well.
And I assume there'll be like theatrical readings. Will there be literature readings? You have poetry students reading their poetry, short stories, that sort of thing?
We'll have poetry students reading. We'll have student fiction writers reading. We'll have playwrights who are reading some of their work. Screenwriters will be in reading some of their work. And this will be then in addition to the theater students who are putting on pieces from some of the shows that they've done over the course of the year. So yeah, you'll be able to see if you think it's part of the arts, really, you'll probably see some aspect of it during the course of the day.
Now, as you mentioned, this came together very short amount of time. Is the idea to build on this for future years?
I think this is we're calling it optimistically the first annual TU Arts and Humanities Festival. And I can tell you, I think that optimism is probably justified in that we've barely been able to fit into the space that I thought I was going to be really struggling to fill just 2 or 3 weeks ago. And now we've filled it completely. We're thinking already about next year. We're going to need more space. We're probably going to have to run for the entire day. And I think we're going to try to add some humanities components to it as well, not just the arts. So we may launch with some kind of talk or lecture or roundtable in the morning. And then that will lead into, and we may even have some students presenting some work that they've done, say, in philosophy. And then that will lead into the arts festival in the afternoon.
Well, that sounds really great. And it sounds like you could really build on this by making it a big event if you brought in, like, maybe artists of some sort, as well as maybe a humanities scholars. And it sounds like a big part of it is sort of creating thematic material as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. This year, as I said, we just kind of went fishing and overloaded our boat. So next year, we'll probably try for a little bit more structure in that sense.
And this is really a community event. This is an event designed for the greater community to come in and see what's happening in the arts and humanities at the university.
Absolutely. It's free and open to the public from 1 to 5. When the programming will be running. We'll have food and drink available for anybody that wants to come in. And, you know, so just if you want to take an hour for lunch, come down. We'll have pizza and other kinds of snacks and soft drinks and things. So you can chat about the art, eat a little bit, go see some poetry read, go listen to some music played. We'll have jazz pianist will be playing in one portion of the building, while in another portion of the building you can hear the woodwinds performance.
Yeah. My guest today is Sean Latham, the director of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa. He's a Walter Chair in English and Comparative Literature. He's also the editor of the James Joyce Quarterly. I could keep going, but I won't. He holds a lot of hats here at the university, and he's helping coordinate the first TU Arts and Humanities Festival Day, which will be taking place at the Lorton Performance Center tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 5. It's really a community event. Really, this is designed to let people better see the work of the Kendall College of Arts and Sciences. We hear a lot about the engineering school these days. And, of course, University of Tulsa started out as a liberal arts college, and liberal arts was at the center from the very beginning.
I think that's right. It's certainly what drew me here as a faculty member 14 or 15 years ago. I knew this not as a place that was filled with engineers, but as a terrific liberal arts college in Oklahoma that was also home to this world-famous journal called the James Joyce Quarterly, which is probably makes our university, it's sort of a joke among some of us anyway, this university is probably better known for its humanities programming in places like New York and Dublin than it is in Oklahoma City or Dallas, for example.
Well, now talk a little bit about this Oklahoma Center for the Humanities. This is a new initiative of the university. You're directing this. How did this come about?
Unexpectedly and rapidly, but I'm very excited about it. Basically, we hired a new dean in arts and sciences, and I think working with President Upham here, TU wanted to really affirm its commitment to the humanities and build on that strength that this university has always had, but also aware of the fact that, at least in universities, the humanities tend to move into often somewhat autonomous and separate little cells and don't communicate with each other very well. And also there's, a larger sense that there's pressure on humanities enrollments. Why would students study humanities? That's not going to get you a job when you leave
a philosophy
college.
Major. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Like, well, you know, here I am an English major, pretty reasonably employed. And so the impetus here is really to do two things, and that's what we put the center together to do. One is to act as a kind of think tank in the humanities. So the humanities really can help us solve some really important questions. They ask the deep and important questions that can't be addressed with the sort of big data of the social sciences or with the formulas of engineering, right? So they're those things that let us ask why we need things, why we build things, why we care about some things and not about others, how we describe the value of things. And we've broken that up in different ways of doing it so that literature professors ask that question using books and theater professors ask those questions through performance and philosophy professors do that by thinking about thinking. But often those, as I said, those groups don't talk to each other very well. So what we want to do is sort of reassemble those groups of people and put them together into some kind of productive conversation with one another. So one piece of our mission is really to act as a kind of think tank that reintegrates the humanities around some very basic sets of questions that will guide our programming throughout the year.
Now, if I can stop for you just a second, because you mentioned social sciences as a part, I've often heard social sciences lumped in with the humanities. Is there a definition of what the humanities really are?
No, I don't think there is, because they're the study of the human. And in that sense, we study the human in a variety of different ways. So I too have heard sort of unusual terms, like we might grudgingly admit to there being something called the humanistic social sciences if we want to think about sort of the political scientists who read philosophy, for example. Are those social scientists or not? So, the problem with those kinds of groupings is that they're really bureaucratic groupings, for one thing, that have ossified sometimes into thinking that they are sort of defined fields. And in fact, what we're all trying to do are solve some pretty basic problems, and it's important that we be able to communicate with one another. So, I think in working on those problems, it's important that we be able to talk to people who imagine themselves in the social sciences as opposed to the humanities, or in engineering as opposed to humanities. And in real life, these things really aren't opposed. That's the idea behind liberal arts education, is you study a little bit of all these things because it tells you something important about how to put very specific ways of knowing together into something that's much more synthetic and creative.
For the purposes of this Center for the Humanities, giving the composition of the Kendall College, I assume it will include philosophy, English, it'll include religion, history, political science. Will it include things like those social sciences, sociology, psychology, in the broad definition of what you hope to explore with the center?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of what we'll be doing, part of the think tank piece of this, will be bringing faculty members together. And we want faculty members from every single department on campus. So, and that includes engineers, that includes people that are studying biology and physics, chemistry, psychology. I think all of those points of view can be brought to bear on very specific questions about humanity. And I can illustrate this better maybe with an example, so that in our first year, we're going to be building most of our programming around the topic of privacy, right? So I can't imagine a more important term for us to be thinking about right now, for one thing, nor can I think of a term that's more sort of averse to any kind of data-driven solution, right? Privacy is something that we need to know what it is, and we know it abstractly, we know it in the way we live our lives, but it's not going to be something that we can write a formula to describe what privacy is, nor can we sort of abstract it from a mass of social data. Right? It's a concept, and that the humanities are the place that concepts happen. And so as we think about those concepts, that's where I would say, it's really important we have someone from the law school, for example, who comes to talk to us about, how is the discourse around law and the language around law shaped what we mean by privacy? How has it changed? How is it changing now? We might need someone from engineering to come talk to us about, what exactly is big data and how does it affect privacy? I mean, we think about Edward Snowden and the NSA, but I don't think we understand a lot of the engineering that goes on behind it. But clearly, there are some very humanistic questions at play for engineers. Should I break into this cell phone?
Yeah, ethical
questions. Or not?
Questions.
Should I listen to this conversation?
So it would be very interesting to get people involved with the cyber programs here and philosophy talking about, where are the ethical lines?
That's exactly what we hope to do. And in fact, we'd like to stage some kind of public debate sort of in the city at some point during the upcoming year. We'll bring exactly that set of groups together, someone from the law school, maybe someone from history, to talk about the ways in which the idea of privacy has changed over time. Someone, an engineer who works on sort of very real world applications right now for what privacy is, maybe as this thing that you're either trying to, to bypass or protect, right? Engineers work on both of these questions.
From a sociological point of view, you're looking at privacy of a completely different definition depending on where you are in the world, too.
Absolutely. TU is a very internationalized campus right now. And it's very evident, really, just being on campus, how different the concept of privacy is for different kind of cultural and national groups.
As well as between generations, too.
Oh, my gosh. That's probably, for me, father of a 13-year-old girl, whose understanding of privacy is just completely different than mine. And I think this is probably going to be one of those things that most separates the current generation from the younger generation that's coming up. It's not going to be bad or good, right? One of these isn't a better way of being private, but it is going to be a fundamentally different way of understanding what privacy is. And I think I think one thing the center can do is sort of ask that question. So if privacy isn't what I mean, that is this thing, this piece of myself that I don't share and that I'm certainly not going to put on Facebook and Twitter, whereas for my daughter, privacy is a thing that actually can be shared, and that's what these social media tools help you do. How does that change then her understanding of democracy or of friendship of love or even location and identity, right? She's got friends all over the world in some ways through these social media devices.
Sounds like very in-depth questions. How are you going to go about exploring that through the course of a school year next year?
Well, we'll do it in two ways. So as I say, you know, in some ways we're going to have this think tank. So we've already assembled a group of faculty that will be working on this that's drawn from five different departments in two colleges here on campus. And we've also got some two student fellows that we've just named, one from English and one from communications. And actually, applications are out right now for what we're calling public fellows, so people that are not affiliated with TU who want to come join this seminar. And it will meet and work together as a group throughout the fall semester. We'll basically meet 3 hours a week, doing a variety of readings in and around the topic of privacy, all from different disciplinary approaches, and see what happens when we put all these people together and say, so what is privacy to you in the law school, and what does it mean to me in the English department, and how do our ways of thinking shape what we mean by privacy? And then at the end of that, throughout the spring semester, those participants will be turning around and presenting their work back to the community in some kind of public forum, just depending on what it is. So we have an artist in the group, for example, who's thinking about doing an art installation of some kind in relationship to privacy, whereas, you know, the English professor in there may end up giving a lecture or running a film series or something like that.
Right.
But the other piece, so we do have that think tank mission, but the Humanities Center has another really important mission, which is to explore the ways in which the humanities can be reengaged with civic and public discourse, right? So often people talk about the humanities as either being a kind of soft knowledge or being reduced to how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin, sort of arcane questions. But as I hope this idea of privacy suggests, right, the humanities ask really important, even urgent questions about things like human rights, right? I mean, there's that too is the kind of domain of the humanities. So we'll be conducting a variety of programming that we hope will be spread actually throughout the city over the course of the year. I mentioned the stage debates that we're imagining. We'll certainly be bringing lecturers and visitors to campus in almost every other week, I think, during the fall, that we'll be meeting with the seminar that we've assembled, but also doing a variety of different public-facing activities. For my own part,
I would think that would be very important to the central mission, is to really get this out beyond the iron gates of
absolutely.
The University
of Tulsa. That is, you know, to me, that's the most important piece of our mission is, and I don't want to call it outreach, I want to call it engagement, right? That we can contribute to the public discourse that's going on right now. And indeed, we are. It just doesn't always seem to be happening under the guise of the humanities. But when we have these conversations, those are humanistic conversations.
Well, and it's also getting the University of Tulsa, the resource of the University of Tulsa, out to the community. That already happens. I know that for a fact. But
yeah. But
it doesn't always, you're not doing it in a systematic fashion to really publicize those efforts.
And we hope that by focusing on just a single theme or two in the course of any given year, you know, we're making the whole community aware of the fact that there is this ongoing conversation both on and beyond campus. So you may find the sort of idea of the history of privacy in 19th century America and its relationship to slavery, for example, not a very interesting topic. But we may be running a much more interesting topic on the ways in which big data is changing our understanding of privacy. So I think there's always going to be a way for different audiences to latch on to what we're doing. And as you come to one event, you'll hear of three other things that are going on, and maybe two of those will be interesting to you. But what we really hoped is to foment a really broad conversation about this topic and for people to understand that it's not just something experts are weighing in on, but really it needs to be part of a community-wide conversation.
Well, and it's also knowing about 19th century America in that sort of helps inform the debate and the sort of ethics of privacy today, because this all, it's a continuum. It's
absolutely. Yeah, our understanding of privacy is itself probably very different than people who, before telephones, right? I mean, the telephone was itself a kind of new media.
It was a social medium.
Yeah,
it was
a
horrible thing to have installed in your house in certain households because it was so impersonal.
And it was passing, you know, your words were passing through operators who could overhear them. Telegraphs even more so, you know, you needed people to actually decode your personal messages. So, you know, new media often produce totally new understandings of what is and isn't private. And history, I think, helps us understand that, you know, we're not losing our privacy now, and somehow we've kept it for hundreds and hundreds of years, but instead our privacy is changing as it has been changing over the course of hundreds of years.
Now, that's just one topic the Center for Humanities will be tackling this coming year. The other one is the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I begins in August
right.
of this year. and you're going to be looking back to the Great War.
That's right. This is one of the things that the Humanities Center was built to sort of capitalize on. So I happened to have a couple of colleagues on campus who I knew were teaching courses in and around World War I, especially as we approached the centenary. And so I invited them together for a conversation. And out of that conversation, they said, well, you know, so is someone else in that department. And, you know, someone in art is doing this too. And that conversation grew and grew. And eventually this group that started as three people became almost a dozen, none of whom really understood or knew what the others were doing. And as a result, we've realized there's this huge conversation that's going to be going on campus about the Great War. But no one was really aware that it was a conversation that was actually happening. So we've decided to make that a sort of second focus for the year.
And I think this gives you a sense of how the humanities interact, because if when you hear World War I, okay, you say, that's a history. That's a history subject. Well, if you're an artist, you know that the Great War brought out all these new currents of art that was based on men who survived this war being exposed to this horrific event, and it changed the way they looked at art, how they created art. You look at the great poets, the English poets of the war. This had a tremendous effect on every aspect of life in the early 20th century. And it's often you don't put these things all together, and I think that's the beauty of this Humanities Center.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're trying to do. And I mean, and you're right, this war was extraordinary in ways that, I mean, it was the first sort of modern war, it was the first mechanized war, it was the thing that sort of drew the limits around certain kinds of warfare practices, poison gas, machine guns, tanks, just a sort of experience of wide total war and devastation that had been unprecedented in human history.
Of course, I've had several guests here in just the last 6 to 8 months have talked about how when we think of it, the influences of the two great wars, it's not World War II anymore. It's the First World War, where the political borders for the Middle East were arbitrarily put together. And this has been the root of our problems in the Middle East ever since, not to mention things like everything from the Ukraine to the Balkans. These events were set in motion after World War I.
Yeah. You know, there were revolutions in mass media. I mean, the war, I mean, so it's not just art, but really the way we thought about mass media in general. The recruiting posters from World War I, for example, are extraordinary things. And McFarland Library happens to hold many of these. And so in July, at the Zero Center downtown, we're going to have an exhibit of World War I materials from McFarland's special collections. And sort of building on that, we'll have a variety of events over the course of the year. But one we're quite excited about is on October 31st and then November 1st in the Lorton Performance Center here on campus, the music department and theater departments are sort of coming together and to produce a show that will mix musical theater with readings of historical letters from the period. So the students will be performing musical numbers by George M. Cohan and other sort of recruiting songs and popular representations of the war on stage. And these will then be interrupted by readings from both the home front and abroad, so that we get a sense of that sort of chest-thumping patriotism on the one hand and the sort of brutal realities of the war on the other. And, you know, I think it's going to make for a pretty extraordinary event. And again, these were people that just had these sort of vague ideas, and we put them in this room, and they're making this show just for us here, and we'll perform it. The October 31st date will actually be a matinee for students in town, then the November 1st will be an evening performance for the city.
Well, it sounds like there's already great things happening at this Oklahoma Humanities Center. And what has it been underway for, about 2 months?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, my guest today is Sean Latham, director of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities. He is the Walter Chair in English and Comparative Literature at the University of Tulsa. The TU Arts and Humanities Festival will be taking place tomorrow from 1 to 5. This is not really under the Center for the Humanities, although I guess you probably had some role in putting this together.
Yeah, it actually is associated with. We're producing it. So.
Yeah. So, and it'll involve a wide range of performances from art, music, dance, film, poetry, screenwriting, the whole gamut in the Lorton Performance Center, every bit of the Lorton Performance Center. And Sean Latham is my guest today. I have to ask you about one other hat you wear, and that is as the editor of the James Joyce Quarterly. This is the 50th anniversary for the Quarterly. It's a big moment.
It is an exciting time for us. You know, it's amazing that in this place that Joyce never visited, or I'm sure probably never even heard of, you know, has been basically the world capital of Joyce studies, in that sense of the people who write and think about, you know, maybe the most important, well, I won't say maybe, the most important novelist of the 20th century and maybe one of the most important writers in world history. And we've, for 50 years, have been publishing every 3-month scholarship on and about Joyce and his works.
Now, how did that get started? Was it because of a collection that was donated to the university, or what actually helped start the quarterly?
Well, part of it was the interest of a previous provost of the university, Tom Staley, who went on to run the Ransom Center down in Austin. And he certainly collected materials around Joyce in our special collections here. But he just had a particular passion and interest in Joyce. This journal actually started in his garage here in Midtown and then moved onto campus. And there were about 3 or 4 other competing Joyce journals at the time, but the quarterly stayed strong and is now, I mean, our readership is worldwide. We receive essays on Joyce from all over the world, 40, 50 countries, I think, so far this year. From places as disparate as sort of Malta and Iran, China. In fact, I was just in China recently because Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, his last and very complicated novel, had been translated into Chinese and became a bestseller in Shanghai, if you can believe that. In fact, there were billboards with Joyce's face and Finnegan's Wake as you would drive around the highways in Shanghai.
That must have been somewhat surreal.
It was. And many of those students and translators actually came to Tulsa to study and do some of their work here.
Now, in a couple months, you have a special event. Bloomsday is a day when many places around the world, they read the works of James Joyce. You're going to do a special event for the 50th anniversary here in Tulsa.
That's right. We call it Bloomsday because it is a wonderful, totally fictional holiday. Think of it as kind of St. Patrick's Day for bookish nerds, I suppose. And Joyce's most famous novel, Ulysses, is all set on a single day, and that day is June 16th, 1904. And at least for the last 50 years, many cities have celebrations to mark this fictional holiday in which people often dress up like as if they were characters from the novel, and they walk around and read passages of the novel at the time that they're happening. So you read the noon passage at noon. And in Dublin every year, for example, this is an extraordinary event. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of people walking around the city in the footsteps of people that never actually walked those streets. That's the amazing thing about it. And so we're going to have our first ever, I think, Tulsa Bloomsday here, actually down on Guthrie Green. This will mostly take place in the evening, but there'll be a Joyce exhibit at the Zero Center. There'll be Irish music out on the green as well as in the Zero Center. I think in some of the other bars and pubs around the Brady Arts District as well. We'll start with a series of public readings out on the green, and then various readers will, including sort of local celebrities, will read different pieces of the book, and as part of a pub crawl that'll take you around the Brady throughout the evening.
All right. Well, it sounds like great fun, and it sounds like you have a lot of irons in the fire these days with
this working
Humanity
very hard.
Center.
Like the festival, once the idea got started, it just caught fire, and you know, I'm doing all I can just to keep up with all the things other people want to do.
All right. Again, the TU Arts and Humanities Festival takes place tomorrow from 1 to 5 at the Lorton Performance Center. The public is invited and welcome.
Most welcome.
To see the efforts of a lot of really creative students. Sean, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Sean Latham is the Walter Endowed Chair of English at the University of Tulsa. He's also the editor of the James Joyce Quarterly and the new director of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities at the University of Tulsa. Their very first event will be a celebration of student works in the humanities tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 5 all over the Lorton Performance Center. The TU Arts and Humanities Festival will feature art, fiction, dance, film, music, poetry, screenwriting, and theater, and it's all free and open to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, you can listen online on demand at any time at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa. You can look at our most recent episodes and search our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.